Hi everybody, I'm Stephen Bradbury, Australia's first Winter Olympic gold medalist. Very much looking forward to motivating and entertaining everybody at Real Estate Recharge on the Gold Coast this October. Hope to see you there.
This is the Top Agents Playbook Podcast, episode 22.
Welcome to the Top Agents Playbook Podcast, your source for the very best tools, tips, and ideas used by real estate's top performers. Now, here's your host, Ray Wood.
Following his gold medal win at the 2002 Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City, Utah, Stephen Bradbury was labelled by the media as the last man standing. Given the situation and how Steve's victory came about, I can see why this label was applied, but I don't believe it's 100% accurate or fair, as it implies his gold medal win was pure happenstance simply because he was there. I think when you listen to my interview with Steve, you'll understand more about his journey, the 12 years of hard work and the enormous setbacks he overcame while ignoring those that suggested he quit. Steve shares a lot of passion and inner feeling in this session and how he was able to maintain his personal mental state to skate over the line in first place and win Australia's first ever Winter Olympic gold medal. While researching for this interview, I was stunned to discover just how tough the road to Olympic gold was for Steve and was fascinated to learn how he kept everything together to savour success in the race of his life. There were some elite athletes on the ice that day in Salt Lake City, and Stephen Bradbury was the one that came home first. So in my opinion, he wasn't the last man standing because the records clearly show he was the best. In the show notes, you'll find a great video about the race together with some commentary from Steve. Simply go to topagentsplaybook.com/22. If you'd like to personally meet Steve and get a photo with him, grab your pass to Real Estate Recharge at recharge2015.com and be sure to join us at our VIP cocktail event on Thursday evening. Okay, before I start the interview, I want to play you some quick audio from English TV announcing to the world what had just happened.
An Australian speed skater has achieved an extraordinary victory at the Winter Olympics, bagging his country's first ever gold medal. The key to his success was simple. Everyone else in the race fell over. A pile-up happened on the final corner of the men's 1,000-metre race. It allowed Stephen Bradbury, who had been in last place, to glide across the finish line, a surprise winner.
I don't know if I feel as though I 100% deserve it today, but you know, I've put in heaps of work. This is my fourth Olympics, and you know, I'm going to ride my luck while I've got it. Hey, quick.
Well, hi, everybody. Today, it's my pleasure and honour to welcome a very special guest to the show. Please give a warm Top Agents Playbook welcome to Stephen Bradbury. How are you going, Steve?
I'm well, Ray.
Can we just go back to the start here? Where did the idea to become a speed skater come from?
Back to the start, yeah. Yeah, you weren't talking about the start of today, were you?
No.
Maybe because it's quite the start of my life, more to the point. Yeah.
Well, it's quite a journey, and we're going to get into it now, and I'm keen to learn more. But leading into today, that was one of the questions I was keen to learn more about.
Well, speed skating for me, mate, started when I was 8 years of age, is when I first strapped on a pair of speed skates, and I'd skated for a few years before that. I followed my dad into the sport, who was the national champion a couple of times back in his day in the 60s.
Wow, okay.
And my mum actually still shows people all the photos of me the first time I was on the ice bawling my eyes out. But yeah, that was where it all started for me. And you know, it kind of goes to show that it doesn't really matter where you're from. You know, a speed skater from Brisbane isn't particularly adept at competing or winning at the Winter Olympics, but if you want something bad enough, you just keep chasing your dream.
Well, I'm thinking about the whole Cool Runnings thing and the long shot that was. I mean, I love that movie. That was
Ray, don't go there. Do you know what the result was?
It wasn't too good, was it?
No, I think I kind of remember them actually tipping over and sliding down on their heads during the Olympic Games and finishing last.
But the important thing is they had a go.
But I get the point.
Yeah. So, yeah, tell us about, so you're 8 years old. Did you have to wear a helmet back then, by the way?
I think helmets were not compulsory back then.
Right.
It was your own selection, but I was a lunatic and I used to crash all the time, so mum and dad definitely had me in a helmet.
Yep. So once you started on this career path of being an athlete, I guess it's not a sport where you could have been a professional athlete back then. How did you kind of support yourself and still focus on your dream?
Yeah, it makes me smile when anybody calls it a career path, because the only time I made any money out of it was the day that I retired.
Interesting.
And I've been able to carve a career out of it in what I call corporate land since then on stage, which I very much enjoy. But back then when I was skating, I was living under my parents' roof and, you know, not paying rent and not having to buy food. But if I was able to maintain a top 10 ranking in the world, which once I got to the elite level in the sport, I generally did, then I had a level of funding that kind of covered all of my expenses. So I didn't have to pay for my training, for my competition, for my flights and hotels and all that sort of thing. And it was the easy part was when you're overseas training and competing, because you didn't need any money. You didn't make any, but you didn't need any.
Yep.
And the harder part was when you were at home for the other sort of 8 months of the year, where you're fending for yourself and working odd jobs just to keep enough money in the kitty until you get over on the World Cup circuit.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people would have started on that, I won't call it a career path, but on that path, not just Australians, but speed skaters everywhere. You've struck a number of obstacles, some big ones, on your way, on your journey. What's the thing that keeps you going? Where do you, like, in the darkest moment, how do you get through that? What drives you?
Well, positive mindset's is a big one, especially when it comes to your job.
Right.
When you're an athlete, I think it's, in a lot of ways, a little bit easier to maintain a positive mindset because you know exactly what you're aiming for and there's a definite light at the end of that tunnel. For me, it was the Olympic Games. I get to go to the Olympics, compete against the best people in the world and see where I finish.
Yep.
There's a measuring stick. But in normal everyday life, the measuring stick isn't quite there. So the drive, the motivation, the determination to come back from injuries or setbacks, which I had through, you know, I broke my neck 18 months before I won the gold medal.
Yep.
And I landed on the back of another guy's blade earlier in my career. I have 5.5 liters of blood and I lost 4 of them in a minute. And
wow.
I got to tell you, that was, for me, that was probably the biggest defining moments of my life, those two injuries.
Yep.
When I got my leg cut open, I thought I was going to die.
Right.
I could feel my organs shutting down. And it's amazing the amount of power that a human can find inside themselves when they're put into a life and death situation like that. And I was able to keep that positive mindset switched on. And if I was having a tough day in training when I came back from that injury, I tried to think back to when I was lying on the ice in Canada with three quarters of my blood spilled around me.
Yeah.
And the bad day in training went away pretty quick.
Yeah.
But the neck injury was probably the more defining moment.
Yeah, talk to me about that. 2000, a skater has fallen in front of you. You've gone, I think, to try and jump him, but you've caught him on the way over. And you've smacked head on straight into the boards. I think you broke your neck, C4, C5. You're in a halo, a neck support halo for better part of 2 months or something, just trying to recover. Tell me about all of that.
Yeah, it was a very low speed crash that would normally have no ramifications to it, but I happened to go into the fence head first, and my chin got pushed right down onto my chest, and so I broke two of the vertebrae in my neck without damaging the spinal cord, obviously. And I had to wear the halo brace, as you mentioned, for 2 months, which is actually screwed into your skull.
Yep.
Pretty much resembled a human building site.
Yep.
And I had that 2 months to really step back and think big picture. And I think a lot of people, or most people, never take enough time to step out of their daily routine and really look back at what their true passions, their true objectives, their true goals are, where they started, because they can get skewed if you don't go back and revisit them. And I had 2 months to do that at this point. And I'd been going through the motions for a while before that. But it enabled me to really refocus, recharge, if you want to call it that, in relation to your event, mate.
Yeah.
But I was able to think about big picture, and everybody around me was telling me at that point that I should hang up the skates. The doctor told me that I'd never skate again.
Yes.
I just went to another doctor.
Okay.
In my head, I didn't have a choice. I'd invested too much of my life in the sport. I'd done 3 Olympic Games, and I hadn't done my best at any of them. And at that 4th Olympics that I raced in Salt Lake City, I was no longer a realistic medal contender like I had been. I'd been the favourite in Lillehammer 8 years earlier. I'd been ranked 5th in the world in Nagano in Japan 4 years earlier, and in Salt Lake City I was past it, mate.
But you were part of the relay. But Steve, you were part of the relay team in Lillehammer that medalled, didn't you? Guys get a bronze, and wasn't that Australia's first? First medal, not a gold medal, but first Olympic, Winter Olympic medal?
Correct, mate. And that medal was for me, able to help me put some of the disappointments of actually being knocked down in the 1,000-metre event, which I was the favourite to win at that Olympic Games. I got taken out by a skater from Belgium, and he got disqualified for knocking me down, but I was left sitting there on the ice thinking, this is bullshit,
yeah,
and didn't get me into the next round. And that relay bronze medal was a really amazing experience to be able to share that with my 3 teammates, Kieran Hansen, Andrew Murther and Richard Nozelski, to win Australia's first ever Winter Olympic medal. But for me, there was still some demons I needed to put to rest, and I did that in Salt Lake City 8 years later, where I skated my best in the quarterfinal of the 1,000-metre, and in the semifinals and the final, everybody else fell over, so I got a gold medal to boot.
Yeah, which is a thing of beauty to watch, and I want to talk about that in a sec. When you're recovering, 18 months earlier after this fall, and your C4 and C5 is broken, you're in the halo. You said there were some changes that happened there, some shifts that changed your thinking and your priorities. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Definitely a mindset shift during the 2 months wearing the halo brace. Up until that point in my life, it had always been about winning an Olympic gold medal, and I didn't have one, and I wasn't going to get one. And that was where the shift changed from outcome to process. It had always been about the outcome. All I wanted was the Olympic gold medal, and looking back at it now, that was the wrong focus, because no matter what your pursuits, your goals are, it should never be about the outcome. Especially for real estate agents, it always needs to be about those little 1%ers of knocking on doors, building your network, building your database, and doing those little things to improve yourself and your offerings as a real estate agent. And whether you get the listings and sell the houses or not needs to be the measuring stick to a point, because you've got to put food on the table. But if you do all those little things right, then you put yourself in position to have good things happen down the track.
Yeah.
And for me, that was where everything changed. I was no longer interested in where I finished at the Olympic Games. Gold, silver, bronze didn't even factor in my head anymore. I just wanted to get to the Olympics once every 4 years, long time between drinks, when the whole bloody world's watching, and skate my best.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's an interesting analogy, that process, because I thought that's what you'd talk about, and what must have happened for you to get back on the horse 18 months later, and that amazing day in 2002 in Salt Lake City. So let me talk about that, because I've watched that, like most Australians, I've watched that, I don't know, dozens and dozens of times. Going into that race, and this is what I've read, and so please correct me if I'm wrong, but from me researching this, knowing I was going to be speaking with you today, going into that race, I think you were the oldest man on the ice. You knew that your chances of actually outskating them or skating faster than them were really limited. Is it true that your strategy was just hoping that, because the competition between those three was rife, that they were just going to go all out and there was a potential for a spill, which is exactly what happened?
Yeah, well, I wasn't just the oldest skater in that final, Ray. I was the oldest skater in the entire Olympic field at that point. And I was ecstatic to have made the final. I did my best by beating a four-time world champion from Canada by the name of Marc Gagnon in the quarterfinals. That didn't really feature on the TV.
Yeah.
And by the time I got to the final, I like to think that there was an element of strategy involved. It's obvious that there was a hell of a lot of luck involved.
Yeah.
And I'm probably the luckiest Olympic gold medalist in history. But I went into that final with a completely different strategy to the other guys in that race. All of the other skaters wanted to win. There was no silver and bronze medals in their mind, whereas me, I was out there to stay out of the way. I had experience and judgment, which had taken me three Olympic Games and a broken neck before I figured it out. And you know, I think experience and judgment are words that can never be overrated, especially in today's competitive world. A lot of people come into an organization or get a job and they do it for 2 or 3 years, especially the Gen X and the Gen Y, and they think they know everything about it. They've got it all covered and they move on to the next one. But they're only scratching the surface at that point. And especially Australian people, we're pretty stubborn. I think most Australians learn experience and judgment from making mistakes, but the easiest way to get it is to listen and learn from people around you that do it better than what you do.
Yeah.
And for me, I was at that point at that Olympics where I knew my own limitations and I had experience and judgment, and I never imagined that I'd get a gold medal out of it, Ray. To be honest, before that final, my coach and I had a discussion and we were pretty confident that I'd pick up a bronze medal before that final, and that was our strategy, to go out there, stay out of the way and pick up a bronze.
Right.
Worked out a little better.
Yeah, it certainly did. Steve, was there any, and I have to ask this because I'm interested, was there any negative fallout from the other camps after the race? I know there was a period immediately after the race where the judges were, I don't know, considering a rerun, but it was certainly talked about, and then the medal was awarded. But was there any negative response from the other teams, especially the US team?
Well, there was a bit of negative response there, eh? I'd say there was that stadium was 16,500 people, and I'd say 14,500 of those people were Americans. And I don't know if you've ever had 14,500 Americans boo at you at the same time.
No.
But it wasn't the greatest feeling at that moment when the whole crowd's booing and you've just won a gold medal.
I was sort of more thinking about, like, personally, or like any approaches from the other teams, or like,
yeah, well, the other competitors in that race, that was a topic of conversation that I would never have brought up with those boys. I wasn't even sure if I wanted to accept the gold medal.
Yeah.
I'd been the favourite to win 8 years earlier and it didn't work out for me, and I would much have preferred to have won when I was the best in the world.
Yep.
I wasn't sure if I wanted to accept it on these terms, but I decided to accept it not for that race but for the 12 years of hard work in the lead up to that race, which I'm completely comfortable with now, but at that moment it was uncertain.
Yeah.
And the American skater who was the favourite, Apollo Anton Ono, he scrambled across and got the silver medal. He congratulated me after the race, which was a huge relief.
Yeah.
And the same with the Canadian skater, Matthew Turcotte, who got the bronze. He congratulated me as well. And then the Chinese guy and the Korean guy, they don't speak English.
Right. So they didn't say anything.
No, but their comments wouldn't have been positive, I'm sure.
Okay. So did Ono go on to medal after that event at future Olympics or anywhere else?
Yeah, he's arguably the most celebrated short track speed skater in history. He retired with 2 gold, 3 silver, and 3 bronze under his belt.
Yeah.
And he's an absolute superstar in the US. He's an amazing human. Recently completed the Hawaii Ironman.
Wow.
Did it in just under 10 hours or something in his first go.
Yep.
He's a freak, that boy.
Yeah. When you were coming round and you saw the three guys go, or you saw – who was the first guy to go, Steve? Was it Ono?
Well, there was actually 5 skaters in that race, Ray, and
right.
One guy had been advanced due to one of the disqualifications in one of the semifinals.
Right.
And Ono was leading, trying to be passed by Chinese Zhai Junli, And Jiajun Li had three Olympic silver medals under his belt previously, and he wasn't interested in finishing second anymore, so he tried to knock Ono over to get by him.
Okay.
And it didn't work. Ono knocked him out of the way, and then the Chinese guy was the first one to fall, but Ono had been pushed wide, and he tried to get back online to stop Han Suan, the Korean, and the Canadian Matthew Turcotte from going past him, and that was where they all came together and the three of them fell. And the old guy at the back, whose legs were a bit tired and couldn't quite keep up, and he was a bit disappointed in that, ended up being far enough out of the way to – I knew I didn't need to skate anymore as soon as they fell. I knew I was crossing the line first, but I had no idea what I was supposed to do, whether I should put my arms up in the air in celebration or I should go and hide in the corner.
Was there a split second where you thought you could have got tangled up in that?
There wasn't, no.
Right, yeah. Because you were back far enough and you were inside.
Correct.
Yeah. I think, Steve, in some ways, in hindsight, the gold's almost sweeter happening like this, is my view. It's certainly given you, I guess, a lot more notoriety. You still would have been the first Australian gold medalist, but the circumstances were, I don't know, there's something deliciously Australian about it, I think. And, yeah, I remember now all the booing and when it's done. They can't take it away from you, no matter what they say.
Ray, you've probably heard of the saying, doing a Bradbury?
Yes.
Yep. It's about 6 months ago, was officially put into the Macquarie Dictionary.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so it'll still be there after I'm no longer here. And every time I hear somebody use it, and that is a lot, for political circles, sporting circles, whatever. It's always being used, and it makes me feel proud. And, you know, I fully understand the luck connotation with it,
yeah.
But I'll just throw you a quote of mine if I can.
Yes, please.
When your moment to shine presents itself, will you be in position and prepared to be the next to do a Bradbury?
Yeah, that says it all, I think. That's a pretty accurate definition. And something that certainly applies to you know, our real estate audience and listeners to this podcast, who you know, so many of them are challenged for so many different reasons. You know, the market's tough; they can't get listings, can't get sales, they can't get their sellers together. But so much of what you've done, and so much of what you'll be sharing, I'd imagine, at Recharge is. It's almost about the mental toughness, and it's the ability to, you know, if you want to know about somebody's character, it's like, what are they like when they're down? When we're up and everything's, you know, and our world is rosy, everybody's lovely, but it's interesting that you see the real side of somebody when they have to dig deep and produce.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, one saying that I hear a lot is, it's amazing how many people give up just before they were about to get what they wanted.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just that final obstacle that's put in your way that is kind of there for a reason to determine how much you want it.
Yeah.
And if you're prepared to go over that final obstacle, well, then that's often where you get the reward that you've strived so hard to get. And if success in today's world in business or sport, if it was easy, everyone would be doing it.
Of course. Of course. What do you think is the... What would you say, and you've had a chance, you know, you've spoken at hundreds of events over time and spoken to thousands and thousands of people, and, you know, so many of them look to you for inspiration. What are we going to be getting into at Recharge? Just give us a little bit of a taste of what we can expect from The Last Man Standing.
The main theme of my presentation, Ray, is that passion, persistence, and teamwork leads to success.
Okay.
And teamwork is crucial. In today's competitive world, I kind of think that the jack of all trades is dead. You've got to be an expert in your particular area, and within real estate, there's more than one area in any industry. You've got to do the bulk of it, the hard work part of it yourself, but you need to surround yourself with experts in areas that you may not be. No matter what your profession is, you still need your accountant, your IT guy, and whoever else. It's hard to be an expert at everything.
Of course.
It's almost impossible to get those little one percenters You've got to hunt for the right people, arm yourself with the right team. And for me, in my sporting career, I didn't do that. Not for everything. I did it for some things, but not all of them. And today, I try and learn from that. You know, I'm a professional motivational speaker, corporate entertainer, and I work with a speechwriter, a comedian, to try and hone my craft, what I do on stage, and to promote myself properly with my website. And it's rewarding in a lot of ways, finding solutions, getting answers, building my team. And as for my message, I like to find people that I'm able to use my experiences and story from my motivational presentations and relate it to their own situations.
Yep.
One example, I had a CEO from a large organization call me up the day after my presentation, and he said, "Hey, Steve, I just wanted to let you know that Peter, my 2IC, handed me his resignation after listening to you yesterday. He realized that he was going through the motions and it was time for him to leave. He wasn't passionate about what he was doing anymore. And he said, the guy's been with me for 17 years and he's my go-to guy." And I'm on the other end of the phone thinking, "Oh, Jesus, what's my lawyer's phone number?" And then the CEO says, "Steve, yesterday wasn't the result that I was hoping for, but your presentation was amazing. Pete's now moving on to do what he loves, and you've forced my hand to find myself a new 2IC, which I knew was going to happen anyway. So thanks."
Wow.
And then I said, "Yep, okay, no worries. See you later."
Yeah. You talked about going back to 2000 with the injury, the spinal injury. You said just in this interview just now that you felt like you were going through the motion, so that forced you to reassess.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's a vital skill. You have to be adaptable, especially in today's fast moving internet world. As a real estate agent, if you're not keeping up with the latest on how to sell a property with 3D videos and videoing yourself, promoting a property and all those sort of things that the savvy real estate agents are doing, then you're not going to be catching those people via realestate.com.au or whatever the mediums are now. It's, I don't know how many percent is internet-based, but I'm guessing it's over 75.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. And a lot of real estate agents still don't pay that the attention it deserves, which is interesting, but that's probably another story for another day. Have you
possibly
got a...
Possibly your story, right? More than mine.
Well, I guess time will tell. Have you got an interesting story to share from your training or competing or something that's a bit amusing or a bit out there?
Well, I've got a lot of amusing stories these days that I talk about in my presentations.
Okay.
Most of them are post my skating career, having three young kids and a wife and the normal everyday experiences that people have.
Yeah.
I could share one story that happened not long after winning the gold medal. I was at a media conference in Sydney to meet Richard Branson. And he presented me, the room was packed, full of people, TV, newspapers, radio. He presented me with a mobile phone that I made free calls on for a few years, so that was pretty good.
Nice.
Following that, he presented me with a signed copy of his book. I was happy with that too.
Yep.
And then Richard Branson presented me with a Virgin Mobile cap. And one of the richest men in the world presents you with a cap with his company logo on it at a media conference. What do you think you do with it?
You put it on.
Put it on your head. Correct. Yep. And I was new to all these cameras and this celebrity thing, and I got flustered. I didn't know what to do with this hat, and I looked at it. I looked back at him. I had a pen as well, so I signed it and gave it back to him.
Interesting. Interesting. What was his reaction?
Oh, he just had a look of a stunned mullet on his face. And let's just say the promotional deal with Virgin Mobile never came to fruition.
Oh, wow. Should have just done the last man standing thing and put both hands in the air. And excellent. Well, buddy, I'm really looking forward to catching up on the Gold Coast, and I know so many of our Best Agents members and our Locked On team as well are really pumped about it. It's going to be a great vibe in the room. So October 22, if you haven't got your ticket yet, go to recharge2015.com. If you need any more information, you can check out everything on the site. Steve, it's been a pleasure. Really looking forward to sharing some time with you up on the Gold Coast. And thanks again for today. It's been a blast.
Yeah, pleasure, Ray. Looking forward to October 22. I believe you've got me speaking at 2 o'clock, and then I'll be back that evening for the cocktail party to share a chat and a beer with everybody.
Looking Fantastic. Forward to it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to buying you a beer. Thanks so much, mate.
Cheers, Ray. Bye. I'm Stephen Bradbury, and you've been listening to the Top Agents Playbook Podcast.